Emily Wright.
Hello, Sam McClary. Happy New Year. A bit late in the day, I suppose.
Yeah, I think we can still say it. We can say Happy New Year to our listeners.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everybody.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Yes, indeed. Have everybody had lovely Christmases and drank too much and
ate too much.
Everyone's too vegan now, aren't they? Though we were just saying.
Everyone is vegan now.
What is it? How do you say it? Veganuary.
I say veganuary, yeah.
Veganuary.
But I think people say veganary. I don't know.
Veganuary.
Nothing against vegans out there, of
Absolutely
course.
Not.
But I love cheese.
That's the headline.
I love cheese and eggs. So I think we gave everyone about a month off from us. We gave them a little roundup of the 12 Tech Talk radios of podcast of Christmas. I knew I could never say it. But now we're back with
new music.
Yay! Apparently not many people liked our own
We had
music.
A few requests. In fact, quite persistent requests to change the music.
Yeah.
Apparently it just didn't go with what we're trying to achieve. Didn't sound very techie.
Yeah. So hopefully today's music is a bit better.
Feedback obviously welcomed if it's
good. I mean, probably the music that goes best with the kind of chat that you and I have at the beginning of this is that Benny Hill music, isn't it? But copyright and all that.
Yeah.
So, today's show, what can people expect?
Well, we're kicking off with two really great conversations, interviews that we've had that really mirror each other, actually. We've got Aaron Block and Jacques. he's suddenly very fresh. We've got Aaron Block, sorry, Zach, and Zach Schwartzman over from New York this week. And they came in to chat to us. They brought treats as well, which is really kind of them. So they came over to talk to us about their international expansion, which is really exciting, their Bridge programme, which is kicking off here in the UK. This time last year, talking to Aaron.
Good. Or Jacques. Lord. Was it Jacques? It was in Cannes. So
it was in Cannes. Maybe
Jacques.
It was Jacques. They were both there, but it was Aaron I had the conversation with, talking about the difference between UK and US prop tech, or rather the gap, if we're honest, between the two. And he was saying, there's a lot of enthusiasm here in the UK, but just not that many startups. And what we were just talking about was him saying, the other thing that maybe we need to work on here in the UK is championing the right startups and championing entrepreneurs. And perhaps that's something that we don't do quite so well, something that he'd like to see more of. And I think that they're really, putting their money where their mouth is in terms of the action that they're taking, by coming over and offering that advisory service and that acceleration program to startups outside of the States. So they popped in. It was really great, actually. We chatted about everything, as you know, because you were there, from the startup world to diversity within the startup world, which is something very close to your heart, I know.
Yeah, no, it was refreshing, wasn't it? We started off talking about tech, and very quickly the conversation switched around to diversity, and they're doing some great stuff there, and hopefully we are too, but lots more of that to come. I guess before we let you listen to that, we should just tell everyone about the first Tech Talk Live of the year.
Yes, absolutely. That's coming up fast. It's the 1st of March. It will be in the morning. It will be a breakfast event. It is how to hire a CTO. I think one of the things, actually, again, that Aaron was saying, and I'm sure it's echoed by many people, is that there is a bit of a dearth of, expertise within companies when it comes to adopting new technology or understanding new technology. The rise of the CTO, you've got CIOs, head of innovation. So when we say CTO, what we really mean is, the people that are championing and taking charge of the entrepreneurial startup tech side within businesses. So the event will be looking at that in more detail. We will have a great panel. Then we will have Palmer Capital coming along, chief exec and new head of innovation. coming to have a chat on stage about, you know, I think, you know, Alex Price is going to, the chief executive, is going to talk about the journey that he went on over the 18-month period leading up to hiring a head of innovation as to, you know, was it worth it and why they've done it. So that will be part of it. And yeah, lots more besides. So hopefully see you all there.
Yeah, and keep your eyes out for, eyes out, that's right, the fire, isn't
keep
it?
Your eyes out.
Keep your eyes peeled. Keep your eyes peeled. All of it sounds painful. But keep a lookout for more details on that on EG, and we will keep updating you with the now weekly Tech Talk Radio. But let's crack on and hear about world domination, I think, is how Zach described what Meta are up to.
Let's. Well, this is quite exciting. It's the first Tech Talk Radio interview of the year, and these two have travelled quite some way.
Just for us?
They're from the United States.
Just for us. So they're nodding. I don't think just for us. Yeah. But still, it's Aaron Block.
Just for you, the listener.
Yeah, just for the listener. Okay, I like that. Yeah. So it is, we're joined by Aaron Block and Zach Schwartzman from Metaprop NYC. How are you guys doing?
Good morning. Great.
Good morning. Doing very well. Thanks for having us.
You're more than welcome. So why are you over here?
It's a great question.
It sounded rather accusatory. It wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
What are you doing here?
Why are the Americans invading again?
Yeah. Well, we got one of you not to come, but we've got the better two.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all from New York, so it's really dangerous. Zach, can we?
We fled. Formally, we're here kicking off our Bridge Program Roadshow. So we've launched this year an extension of our primary accelerator program, which is based in New York. And this program is focused on international prop tech startups, focusing first on London and EMEA more broadly, that are looking to expand into North America. So we've come over to meet with a bunch of the candidates, talk to potential corporate partners. While we're in town, we're meeting with some of our international LPs, and generally kind of plotting world domination.
And anyone listening who hasn't heard of what you guys are up to, you know, if there's anybody left, sort of based out of New York first and foremost, and then obviously bringing it to the UK and then globally beyond that, what is it exactly that you guys do?
Yeah, well, we really do three things. They are all focused on early stage prop tech. We are very active investors, all at the early stage, broadly defined, of real estate and property technology. So we invest primarily at seed, pre-seed, selectively at Series A. We're investing out of our second venture fund. We began our life and continue to run a very active acceleration program, which is more hands-on version that works with a subset of the companies that we invest in. Roughly a third of the companies that we invest in participate in one of our accelerator programs, which began with a 22-week boot camp in New York, really focused on growth stage prop tech companies. We now have partnered with Columbia University to run what is now a continuum of three different accelerator programs. That core program, a pre-accelerator focused on kind of idea to company stage acceleration, 8 weeks, small, truncated, and now our international bridge program. And the third leg of our stool is a advisory services wing through which we work most notably with Cushman & Wakefield to really serve as an outsourced corporate development resource for large corporate players in real estate all around engagement with early stage prop tech companies.
Great. And Aaron, I know that this time last year almost... it was MIPIM last year, so I mean it is looming fast, isn't it? We were chatting and we were talking a bit about you know, the US prop tech world and the UK prop tech world, and you said that there was a lot of enthusiasm in the UK, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but indicated there might be sort of some way to go. A year on, how do you feel about that? What are your thoughts on the UK prop tech scene specifically compared to the US prop tech scene, I guess?
Yeah, I'll double down on that statement. Certainly, there's a tremendous amount of enthusiasm here. I would say that I have some additional respect now that has been earned from the folks who are in the prop tech scene here, primarily in Western Europe and a little bit in Asia, some folks who are taking prop tech quite seriously and are championing prop tech opportunities within their larger organizations or in the broader community in the case of consumer-facing technologies. The enthusiasm comment was meant to reinforce, and I'll do that now, the fact that there's just not as many startups here. And I think that's fairly obvious to most folks, certainly us, those of us who invest in the space. But that creates an incredible opportunity here in the UK, in Germany, in France, in Israel, and some of the other markets that that have the interest level from the enthusiasts and can take advantage of the blossoming prop tech community that's here to start piloting and testing more. And I think by the end of this week, we'll be able to issue a few challenges to the market that we'd be happy to share with you, including to the corporate community, particularly on the enterprise side, to pilot and test more technologies here in Western Europe in order to give these markets a little bit of an unfair advantage relative to North America, which has been a little sleepier. Mm-hmm. So we've learned a lot. It's no longer just there's a lot of entrepreneurs on the other side of the pond and not as many here. It's a little bit more nuanced than that. And I'd say the UK in particular gets a lot of credit for being very forward-thinking.
Do you think the right people are being forward-thinking, though? Are we finding that there's growth in the people that get prop tech and you're seeing more, or maybe not more startups, as that number does seem to have fallen, but those voices are getting louder. But are the right voices now talking about tech in a real estate world as well? Or do you think there's still more work that needs to be done to get the big boys, or maybe not the big boys, the smaller, more traditional guys to realize that this is okay to learn about tech and what it can do for you, and it's not all about disruption, it's about enablement?
There's a few things at play here. If you think about the big boys and girls, you can think about the multinationals who have breadth and depth, maybe different asset types or different service lines. Those folks have a really hard time finding scale in prop tech. They want to engage, they want to try, they want to test, but finding places to try and test and then finding scale with those tests in order to justify something that, quote, moves the needle is really, really hard. So I don't think anybody quite yet at that scale has the right mousetrap. Everybody's in the process of figuring it out. So I would say there's still a long way to go there. Of the large domestic here in the UK in particular, and in many of the other cities where we have investors in our funds, you're starting to see a pattern that mimics what we saw in New York a few years ago, which was that the more entrepreneurial ventures, being the family offices, the family-owned developers, and the folks who have more flexibility than publicly traded REITs or others, are able to engage a little bit more. And here in the UK, we've noticed, and we have meetings lined up this week, we have 17 meetings in 3 days here, an incredible dearth of prop tech-focused professionals inside of these entrepreneurial, large but entrepreneurial organizations. And that really mirrors what we're seeing in New York. And I think that's a really positive development because those folks are the ones who can pilot and test faster. And once they pilot and test, it de-risks for the multinationals. And once the multinationals see that things have some traction and can go in multiple markets, they can embrace more and the market moves forward. So I think we're starting to see closer to parity here. And I think the next 36 months will get us there from everything except from a new technology startup perspective. Unfortunately, you can't fix that overnight.
There's a lot there. Sort of similar to Sam's question in a way, the other thing that, you know, I was asking a lot last year, and I think I'm still asking this year, what day is it, 16th or something? 16 days in, is how we and also the, you know, corporates and the PropCos particularly, and the tech sector, but how people distinguish between the noise and the real value. And I know that Sam was mentioning, you know, the right people and that kind of thing, but there is still so much noise around this sector. And the more that people get wind of it or, you know, understand little bits here and there, that noise tends to exacerbate a bit. So what are your thoughts on, you know, cutting through that noise and getting to the right stuff quicker?
Zach, how do we get rid of prop tech fatigue in these markets that have fewer startups that are interesting? And in the U.S., I think we're far away from prop tech fatigue, but I sense here, particularly in the U.K., that some people are starting to say enough's enough. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of buzz. Where are the results? Where's the real value here? How does an individual or an organization avoid the prop tech fatigue in a market like this?
I'd asked the question like that.
that's a great question. I mean, I don't think there's only one answer to it. I think if I'm looking for what it might be, though, I think I'd look to a little bit of kind of the role that we play in the U.S. and the role that some other folks have played as well, which is, primarily a coordination in communication role and facilitating greater feedback. First of all, ease of finding folks within large corporates who really care and will provide honest feedback. And it's generally honest feedback around the potential ROI and needs within their organization when it comes to technology. And the faster you do that, the more time that you kind of cut out of the entrepreneurial journey in which someone is trying to develop or proffer a solution that does not directly translate back to their client's bottom line. It also helps uncover a lot of areas that might be a little more hidden or niche, particularly on the enterprise side, where an entrepreneur might not have direct experience just as a consumer, and unveils them as potential opportunities to build against. I think the more of that you do, the more you speed path to commercialization, and basically just shorten the feedback loop that an entrepreneur is experiencing, the greater potential you're going to have to bring forward solutions that really do make a difference in someone's enterprise. I think the other thing that you do is, as those come about, you need a platform, and you guys certainly provide one, to really be a microphone to champion the best of breed ideas and provide a kind of guiding light to the rest of the entrepreneurial community you may be coming up.
And Zach, anyone that was at our Tech Talk Live event in September at the White Collar Factory will maybe recognize your voice or remember that you were there. And something that you said, and sorry, I realize I keep quoting you guys back to yourselves, which I'm sure is really annoying. You're thinking, what did I say? You were talking about sort of the types of startups and the types of ideas and that are really worth considering. And you were saying, I think the quote was something like, the things that bore people at cocktail parties, there's money in that.
There's money in boring.
could you explain a little bit more about that for anyone that wasn't there, to kind of get a sense of exactly what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when people think about prop tech in the scope of the broader technology market, they often think about a market that is slower to adopt technology than a lot of its peers may be. But one of the things that people don't necessarily think about is the sheer size of the real estate end market, and that offers the potential for a lot of solutions that may seem more niche, but in reality have market opportunities that are measured in the billions. So we have over-indexed towards what may be sleepier niches on the enterprise side of real estate and prop tech. So that's areas like title insurance, like surveying, like appraisal, areas like that that frankly, they have a certain effect at a cocktail party. But
I just yawned.
Thank you. But that there's real opportunity there. And the other thing that you find is that those are areas where you are not competing against many. You may be bringing forth the only real modern solution that market has seen in decades, if not longer. And so there's a lot of opportunity there. And we are constantly dissecting the real estate value chain and trying to look for other opportunities across asset types that fit that mold.
Do you think there's a naivety then perhaps here in the UK? Because it feels like whenever we're talking to people about UK prop tech startups, everyone's talking about VR and AI and, sort of the Airbnb model for various services. Is it because we're still so juvenile when it comes to tech, that we're focused on those sort of the bright lights and the sparkly things that you can do with tech, and we need to take a step back and be British and boring and look to the corners?
I wouldn't be so presumptuous as to say that necessarily coming in from the outside. Aaron, you've spent more time through the global startup.
Aaron is presumptuous.
So
yeah.
Feel free to be presumptuous. I would say I've tended to see more of that, and my interest tends to get piqued when you do have a little more of the boring enterprise side of things. There is a lot of noise in places like residential brokerage, other areas like that, that are going to be more familiar to a consumer. Mm-hmm. And so we are looking where other people aren't.
I think there's, at the end of the day, the way we've built our business and we've built our team by people who like to get their fingernails dirty, who roll up their sleeves and get involved in startups. And I think there's some great examples of that here and some people that get involved. Pi Labs was one of the pioneers in this space. You see James Eddy starting to get more involved in helping startups. Anthony Slumbers really, you know, doesn't mind
never
at all.
Never shuts up, yeah.
Right, but doesn't mind at all getting into the weeds with these startups. We need more of that here. We need people who aren't afraid to make themselves vulnerable, to say that they don't know everything, but they want to do whatever they can to help, which seems to be a little bit of a culture difference here from my sense. I'm being presumptuous now. I don't see as many people being open with the startup CEOs. I see a lot of standing on resting on laurels and saying, "Oh, I'm a director. I'm a managing director. I can help you in my firm." As opposed to,
can I just say that for the benefit of our listeners, there was a brilliant hand gesture and facial expression that went with that.
Yeah, it's not on video. I think what I'm trying to say is if we just focus on helping startups do better, if we just focus on helping startups grow, I think we will see more progress in this market. You can't be an expert unless you're doing the work. A lot of people here want to be experts but aren't doing the work. And in the US, there's a lot of people doing the work who have a little bit of a different style and approach. And I think we could use a little bit more of that here. Let's get into the weeds. Mm. You know, another challenge, let's roll up our sleeves. Let's get our fingernails dirty. When we're yesterday with one of the largest owners of real estate on planet Earth, and they say in these markets, they see new technologies coming to them, oh, maybe once every other month. It's alarming. Right? It's really alarming. Where are the people in the community who have these relationships with the large players? Why aren't they bringing new technologies? Why aren't they helping the startups? Forget what it does for me or what it does for Zach or what it does for you guys, right, sitting across the table. Why don't we focus on what's best for the startups, create an entrepreneurial environment where they can thrive and do anything we can to help them? That is Zach Ahrens. That is Zach Schwartzman. That is Aaron Block and a number of people in the U.S. And you also have those people here. My challenge is let's get more of those people. Let's cultivate those people. Let's create innovation communities that help startups grow.
Oh, no, you go.
No, you go.
Okay. Don't need to be asked twice.
Maybe the same question.
Maybe.
Let's see.
Telepathic, perhaps. I've now forgotten the question, obviously. What I was gonna
How about ask. We, can we turn it around? We never get a chance to interview you guys.
Oh, we don't know
well,
anything.
We don't, yeah.
What do you mean? You don't think the listeners are interested?
No. Well, we usually chat about any old rubbish, so.
Well, we were really piqued in our pregame warm-up here, yeah. Talking about women in the industry and initiatives around that. Mm-hmm. And that's something I would really like to get some airtime for from your perspective and hear what's happening here, because I have a feeling there may be ways for us in North America to be learning some things from you and bringing back some best practices. Sam, what are you doing around women and technology, women in real estate and leadership for those folks?
So we, well done.
I actually quite like it.
Yeah.
It's because the question wasn't directed at me.
Well, it will be soon.
You're next.
That sounds very sinister.
We about 18 months ago now, I guess it was, maybe even more, launched an initiative called Rewire, which is Recognizing and Empowering Women in Real Estate, which is a club, I like to call it, or a tribe. That's the new word, isn't it, for women of all ages, all levels, from all parts of the built environment. So you could be an agent, a lawyer, a developer, you could be a engineer even. Everyone's welcome. And it was set up really because I think there was a element of, I'll get in trouble here, but I don't really mind, of women's groups that were very much like, oh, poor us as women, we get a really raw deal. It's so tough. And I, after a few glasses of wine, thought, I really hate that attitude. And it's not poor, Russ. And if we want to make a change, there's one person who can make a change, and it's you. So let's have a group that is focused on you making the change for you.
Did you set up that group? Or was that group already in existence and you came into?
No, that was myself and the lady that I was having a few glasses of wine with, who's if you have an idea, she doesn't let you drop it. So we set that up with a nice party with the Countess of Wessex, as one does. This year we're really sort of powering that up to grow it, to take in even more of the industry, and really, I guess, on the back of, you know, the whole Weinstein stuff, to use all that energy that there is around diversity, not just gender, but every element of diversity and inclusion, to say, okay, well, look, let's take that power and do something for ourselves. And you know, our tech events that we'll be running through the year, we'll be doing elements around diversity in tech too, because I know, Emily, when you were at New York Real Estate Tech Week, you noticed there that there were a small number of women, and definitely not enough.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I was talking to Julia from PwC at the event, which was obviously, you know, Metaprop event, and it was brilliant. And there are fewer women at events like that in the UK and the States, and I imagine it's something which continues, you know, throughout the world. We were talking about why that was, and someone said, well, you know, you have tech and then you have property and they join together, and when that happens, that is the ratio that you're likely to get. And I think that the really encouraging thing is that, you know, everyone sat around this table, and then, you know, going on from that, hopefully everybody in both those industries is seeing that and thinking, well, that doesn't feel right, which is brilliant, because it shouldn't. And there's a lot of kickstart for change. I know that you guys were talking about that and how you're working towards making changes, and, you know, not necessarily yourselves, but sort of passing that on to the industry from the position that you're in, being able to influence, which is exactly what we're trying to do here. And hopefully if everybody does that, those changes will start to filter through.
We're at the horrifically impossible intersection of real estate, which is historically very male dominated, and tech, which is historically male dominated.
Exactly.
If we were only in media, I think we would have the holy trinity of awful male-dominated industries with histories of sounding like pigs and acting in some ways, unfortunately, like pigs. Zach, you run the Diversity Anti-Harassment Initiatives for Metaprop. What specifically are you seeing from the group, which has a female founder? Metaprop has and partner in the business, folks on the investment committee for our accelerator programs, leaders in the business, including a marketing director. We have a number of people. But for an organization, if we fancy ourselves forward thinking, what are some things that we're doing? And I'd like to hear Sam's thoughts in particular about how that mirrors or is different, compares or contrasts to what you're seeing here.
Sure. Well, I'd preface it just by saying, you know, obviously this is a work in progress, right? We are ourselves a small startup organization, and we are a young industry. So we are much more intentional now than we were even, say, a year ago around this topic. I think our efforts to date have kind of been multi-pronged. On the one hand, just get your own house in order and make sure that you're set up as a, you know, good, proper HR shop. But after that, you know, given our role in the community, we try to promote as much as possible strong female leaders within the prop tech and broader real estate and technology spaces. So you get that sometimes at our public-facing events and in who we feature in our own media. We have our own internal goals around representation. You know, you pointed out the Prop Tech Summit and Real Estate Tech Week. We definitely looked at that afterwards and said, you know, strong marks in some ways, but room to improve. And that's an area where we continue to focus. It's important to provide kind of public examples in that way. We work internally in our own acceleration efforts to help our founders, you know, many of whom are male in small organizations that may be male only, to understand the importance of diversity and ways to make strides within their own organization, recruiting, culture.
How do you do that, Zach?
Well, I think you have to you know, you have to provide examples of what happens when monoculture dominates and what the basic kind of what how that stems from inertia and just reaching out to one's own group. You have to provide opportunities that are really easy to execute on in terms of resources to expand their recruitment pipeline. And you have to provide them with a little bit of cultural guidance and, you know, frankly, open your own kimono and vulnerability about ways in which, you know, we've seen ourselves kind of evolve when it comes to this topic over the years.
One of the things I'm really proud of is watching you as the champion for this gender equality, general equality, anti-harassment and diversity initiative include in all of our communication, regular communication with our limited partners, updates on how we're doing against our own goals on that. And you're giving presentations, you personally, to each of our accelerator classes around the benefits and drawbacks and challenges and real life examples of what they can do better. The fact that you're taking a leadership role in this, I think, is extraordinary. I don't think many organizations of our size, only 11 people, have this level of commitment. And something that I'm really proud of and really appreciative of that you do. So I want to find ways, Sam, tell us about what your friends and what people are talking about, what initiatives you're seeing, and how can we bridge this gap? How can we bring the best of what we're doing in general in North America to the best of what you're doing here in Europe?
I think that nobody, you know, as much as this industry and tech by the sounds of it is male-dominated, it's not purposely male-dominated. It's not that people are saying, let's not hire any women. It's just, it's almost habit, I guess. And it, you know, as you were saying, Zach, if that's the community you go to, you know, whatever business you're in, you want to hire the best people. And if people aren't putting themselves forward and saying, I'm the best people, then you won't necessarily see those people. I think we had a woman who was one of only five Tornado jet fighter pilots.
Wow.
She was pretty cool.
That's cool.
But she, just to illustrate the point, she, obviously an amazing pilot if she's one of only five women and not many men, I think, who flew Tornadoes on the front line. But she failed every sort of computer test that she had to do to get into pilot school.
I remember the story. It's a great story.
And it was... but she could fly. She was one of the best pilots out there. But when it came to doing this computer test, failed every time. And they realized that the reason she was failing that test was because it had been programmed for a male brain. Mm. And obviously male and female brains are different. We can't get away from that. And as soon as they started to look at reprogramming that system, then she could pass it. And I think, you know, the same is happening across all industries at the moment, that our recruitment processes, our career progression processes are maybe just programmed in the wrong way at the moment. And now that there is a bit of clarity over that, and that it's, you know, all these things I think always have to come to the light, usually through some negative way. But let's take that negative message and say, okay, well, we can use that to fix the system. And it sounds like that's exactly what you guys are trying to do. And I think it's great that you're doing it in a small group of people, because, you know, as you grow, there'll come a time, Zach, when you don't need to chair or run that program, because it just won't matter, because it won't be... the programming won't be there. It's just we hire the best people who do the job best.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. You know, there's one area that I'd kind of flag that's on our radar and is kind of our next frontier and challenge that I'm throwing out there, not because we have the answers, but because when we meet back here next year, hopefully, you know, you feel free to check in and challenge us and see how we did on the score. But same goes very much to what you just raised. And it's the idea of, you know, as a selector and filter within the startup ecosystem, how do you ferret out kind of unconscious bias from your own selection and diligence process, from the way you interact, from what is the broadest pool of potential startup candidates that you are sourcing, in our case, entrepreneurs that you are trying to encourage to go on to actually form companies in the first place? And then once you have that population, you know, how are you doing your selection and interaction to get down to investment decisions and making sure that, you know, you are posing questions, interacting in a way, welcoming people in a way that's egalitarian. And that's an area that we are investigating right now. We do not at all claim to have the answers, but it's on our mind, and we welcome resource and people who have done more thinking than we have to help educate us as we go through that process.
And out of interest, how have you found the reaction to what it is that you are, you know, you're standing up for? What you guys are saying is brilliant, and more companies should be doing it, particularly companies of your size, as you pointed out. It's quite extraordinary, the dedication that's going into this. But what's the feedback? What's the reaction from, you know, the wider community?
I think generally positive. Hopefully it's a cause most people would agree with. You know, again, I wouldn't, you know, proffer to have all the answers. So I'd say it's encouraging. I think people, you know, will hopefully hold our feet to the fire as make sure we're kind of living up to our own words. But it's generally been quite supportive. Folks within our own organization and then broader network and community have really helped us. You know, I'm thinking of Karen with Parity and a couple mm-hmm. others have really helped
yeah,
us.
Yeah, investors of ours have been very positive. Well, you know, here's one thing. We pride ourselves in helping the startups, right? That's how we got our start before we were venture capital funds, mm-hmm. before we were doing advisory work for large multinationals. We were first and foremost people who helped startups grow. And because of that, we are very sensitive to using the startup's time wisely. We really want them in every interaction with us to not walk away saying, why did I just do that? Why did I sit in that class? Why did I take that meeting? Why did I go to that event? We think about that a lot. And most of us are entrepreneurs, so it makes it easy to have empathy and think about that. And one of the things I was concerned about when we first started this diversity anti-harassment push in the beginning of 2017 was when the class actually came through and we did the training itself. You know, it was an hour plus of making a bunch of CEOs mm-hmm. sit through diversity anti-harassment mm-hmm. training, and one woman out of the group. And I was expecting, I was a little bit terrified that we were going to get some pushback because I'm super sensitive to wasting their time. But we obviously think this is important enough. And afterwards, we got incredible engagement, incredible conversation, people going, I didn't understand that. I didn't see it that way. So, you know, that's very rewarding. You know, our LPs get it. The larger organizations have trainings and full HR groups dedicated to this stuff. But when you see the smaller companies, the people who are going to grow into tomorrow's leaders starting to really click, that's really rewarding for us and not something we get to talk about very much. So thank you for the outlet here. It's something we're really proud of and really excited about. So hopefully, you know, hold us accountable. Every time you see us, ask us how we're doing on these initiatives. We'd appreciate that.
Well, us too. And, you know, anytime you guys are over here, or if we make it back over to the States or anywhere with your global domination, if Rewire and Metaprop can work together, that would be awesome.
Well, we'll work that in. You know, we have 6 weeks of programming coming up. The Bridge program has two elements to it. The first is called the Stretch portion of the program. That happens here in the UK over 6 weeks, starting in March. And during that time, we will help the startups that will be entering or expanding in the North American markets understand North American culture, understand data sets and how to grow, understand recruiting, retention, legal aspects, difference between markets, preparing them. Think of it as a cat ready to pounce. Part of what we'd like to do is tie in some of our diversity anti-harassment training at that stage, so that when they come, they're not taken aback by the level of intensity that we are quite known to have, with begging for forgiveness from all of our colleagues in Europe. We're often accused of being a little intense, but really giving everybody a great foundation during that stretch period so that they can hit the 14-week sprint period in North America and really just focus on growing and growing and growing. So we're really excited about that. During that six-week program, we should really try and tie this together. Leela Collins, who's helping run our program all around prop tech and acceleration, is also a key champion internally and leads a women in prop tech group. And I'd like to put her in touch with you if you don't mind. And
yeah,
maybe
no,
we can work in something during that 6 week period with your group too. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So you mentioned March. Obviously, the other thing coming up in March, which we touched on briefly earlier, is MIPIM. So you guys are always very active. Can anyone expect to see anything different from you guys this year at MIPIM? Anything that they should particularly be looking out for?
Yeah. We're really excited. Reed, MIDEM, and MIPIM, the parent company of MIPIM, have really taken a thoughtful approach recently to prop tech, thanks to everyone in the community on all in all geographies. We spent a lot of time in Asia this year at MIPIM Asia. We've spent a lot of time at MIPIM UK, at MIPIM in Cannes in March, and certainly during Real Estate Tech Week with the MIPIM PropTech Summit. We've got the upcoming MIPIM PropTech in the spring in Paris, which is really exciting. So you're starting to see bespoke programming around prop tech, as well as more institutionalized programming within the larger events. So I think you're going to see a much more thoughtful approach this year at MIPIM. Last year, we had to be the ones setting up the prop tech overview and listing the prop tech related events for the community. We did that because no one else was doing it, and we decided that we had to. This year, fortunately, we don't have to. You know, Reed Midham really gets it, and they've been a great partner for us, and I'm really encouraged by the way they're thoughtfully going about doing this. So I think it'll be a little bit easier if you like prop tech this year to get your hands on what you want to do. It will not be any easier to get your hands on a ticket for our yacht party. So friends are welcome. But unfortunately, the boat's not big enough. And we will have a different theme this year.
When the canapes last year were amazing. And also, there was fancy dress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't that?
Yeah.
A few people really, really went to town on that.
I don't understand. Yeah. We're lucky we even get dressed to go to work.
Well, it is MIPIM. So.
Yeah. 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 A lot of rosé, a lot of excitement. You know, a few of us will be there. A few of our startups will actually be there. The startup competition this year will be extraordinary relative to previous years. The caliber of the startups in the startup competition in the semifinals in all of the markets, and, you know, we run that for Reed Midham, is head and shoulders above anything we've seen in previous years. And that's really encouraging. So I think the actual finals competition will be a hot ticket this year.
Who do you think, what kind of people should go to that finals competition? Who should the audience be? It might not be the audience that thinks they should be there, I suppose.
Yeah, people with a pulse. I mean, you know, we're evangelists and we're enthusiasts, so it's hard for us to say that everyone shouldn't get a window into it. But my question back rhetorically would be, if you're a real estate practitioner and professional anywhere in the world, where will you go to get vetted, intense presentation and exposure to decent to good to maybe even great startups in one place? It's really hard to do. That's why people engage with us. That's why people invest in our venture funds. That's why people hire us for advisory assignments, is because engaging with early stage companies is impossible virtually. It's really, really hard to filter through all the noise and get to the good ones. So if there's a presentation of a group of good ones that have been vetted from all around the world by people including us and some other great judges who have been on these panels in these different markets, I mean, I think we call it idiot proof. I mean, how do you not go would be my question to your listeners. How do you not show up and see what's there? Even if they're not directly applicable to you, to get this volume of information in such a short amount of time is not really possible without paying us a lot of money or investing a lot of money in our funds, essentially. So we're really excited about it.
Great. Well, we've really loved working with you guys over the last year or so. And, you know, obviously having Zach coming over to do Tech Talk Live and coming out to New York Real Estate Tech Week, where I spent the majority of my time there on the Wednesday in a coat closet interviewing people. So it's great to interview you guys back here in the UK in the studio.
In slightly bigger.
Not in a cloak closet.
It's not in a cloak closet, but
the window.
A cloaked closet.
Yeah.
A coat closet. Yes, just only slightly bigger. And we really look forward to continuing to work with you over the next 12 months and beyond. And obviously, you know, having had our chat today, there's all kinds of avenues where there's a great crossover. And I'm sure that everybody listening will be really encouraged to hear that, whether they're from the tech side or the prop side, or, you know, maybe we've got people who aren't part of either industry who are fans of the show. Who knows?
Who knows?
Well, we are big fans of the show. And thank you all for doing this and for putting this on and for taking it quite seriously and asking thoughtful questions of interesting guests, you know, whether they're friends of ours, competitors of ours, or people we've never even heard of before. It's really great to hear the way you engage with people, and your styles are very disarming. People open up to you. It's a pleasure listening.
Oh. Excellent. Before we go then, with that in mind, if you had a hit list for us to get onto this show, Who do you think we should get on?
I'd rather see you spend time with the entrepreneurs. Again, I think the best thing we can all do as a community is really focus on helping the entrepreneurs. So those entrepreneurs that are starting to take off who could use a little bit more exposure, that's the challenge I'm making to the market here in the UK and in Western Europe. We need to all come together to help them a little more. It's a little bit harder here than it is in North America. It's a little bit harder for these folks to get the exposure, to get to the right people and the right organizations if they're enterprise focused. We have, in my mind, as enthusiasts, a little bit of a responsibility. So I would like to work with you as one of many to help you find some of those folks and give them a voice and give them some exposure. I think that would do a lot for all of us in the coming years.
That would be great. And I think that almost ties us back around to the diversity thing, because we launched a competition last year looking, the Tech Talk Academy, looking for startups. And I was surprised at how difficult it was to actually get engagement from those startups to want to be part of this competition and put themselves forward. Anyone out there who does want to come and talk to us, does want to be part of next year's competition,
this year's competition, 2018, is January.
Damn it. Get in touch and we'd love to have them on the show, wouldn't we?
We would. And we'd love to have you on the show. So thanks very much to Aaron and Zach. I think that's the first time that anyone has quite so successfully turned the tables on us and questioned us. I enjoyed it. I thought it was quite a nice dynamic, actually.
I think we're great to interview.
Yeah. All right, catch the chase.
I mean, really. As I said before, it was refreshing, and I'm looking forward to one, talking to them more about the diversity issue, and two, having so many entrepreneurs and startups get in touch with us to talk about their journeys in tech.
And on that note, you know, Aaron, your wishes are command. You said that you wanted this this podcast to give a platform to more entrepreneurs and to more new startups. Well, the other person that I spoke to, actually, you weren't here.
Oh, that's because I took about 17 years off over Christmas to get my toes broken.
Yeah, that sounds unusual out of context. You had an operation, didn't you, to be able to run faster and generally be a speedier human?
I'm now bionic, yeah.
Okay. Well, you are, actually, aren't you? You've got pins in your feet.
Yeah.
We digress. I spoke to Mike Malloy, who has set up an app. And I actually, it's called Dashflow. I must admit here that when it comes to people setting up new apps, I'm a bit like, ooh, an app. But if you listen to one entrepreneur this week or today, listen to this guy. I've seen the demo, which is available, and there will be a link available to that if anybody else wants to look at it. And having seen it, I do think this is something that really could save the property industry an awful lot of time and effort. But he'll be able to explain it much better than I could ever hope to. So here's Mike. So thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Dashflow looks amazing.
Well, thank you very much. That's hopefully the uniform positive feedback we want in 2018.
Well, I'm sure it will be. It's very... it's very intuitive looking, and it seems to kind of get across what has traditionally been so complex and so complicated and yet so integral to the industry in a very straightforward way. But obviously, people listening to this can't see that. So could you do your best to kind of explain exactly what Dashflow is all about and how it works? And I know that there will be opportunity for people to have a look at it as well if they want to.
Yes, well, thanks, Emily. I'll try my best. The product is very much geared to being intuitive and displayed. It's a very interactive experience. Without trying to get into too much jargon, we often talk about the symbiotic sort of relationship between desktop and mobile, and also the good relationship between man and machine, woman and machine, as the case may be. And the display is exceptionally simple. Every screen can be tapped, swiped, or pinched, and you can go from screen to screen, tapping through basically your thoughts and organizing your judgments exceptionally quickly. But fundamentally, it's a CRE app. It's a commercial real estate app to evaluate investments and new opportunities.
And from what I've seen on the sneak preview, you can in real time change things incredibly quickly and actually get a really amazing snapshot of you know, what it is you're looking at, whereas beforehand you might have had to trawl through pages and pages and pages of documents. Could you explain a bit about how that's all come together? I know that there's some AI-enabled wizardry going on.
That's right. There are three sort of major strands into why it's a revolutionary app in our mind. It's a step change in that workflow you've just described. There's that AI aspect, there's the mobile aspect, and it's a disruptive aspect based on the speed of getting a multitude of tasks done. But insofar as that convenience you mentioned about seeing the results instantly, that was always a pain point that I wanted to solve in the industry from a creative perspective, which was, we broadly know, we're a people industry, we broadly know the shape and size of a building. Expert principals and deal makers know roughly if something's going to work for them. But there's a big sort of gaping yawn between knowing intuitively something works for you and then doing all the work that you need to do to get to investment committee. And as you say, you can be trawling today through tons of pages and static reports. And that's where the display comes into being. Because for the first time, we can have this display through Dashflow showing to 200 people in an auditorium or two people in a room, and everybody can follow the deal. And at the moment, there is no software that has been developed to service the property industry. And yes, we have our creative part to Dashflow, but it is very important, I think, to point out that to date, the property technology sector, insofar as CRE investment is concerned, hasn't delivered that quick interface to look at answers and justify them and print out the reports for you for the scenarios you're interested in. And that's a key solution that's been driven behind the design of Dashflow to see returns instantly, but also provide those complex appendices people have to work on.
Why do you think that for such an, as I said, integral part of the industry, I mean, it's not just integral, I mean, it basically is how the industry works. For something that is so crucial, Why has nothing been done before that rivals what you've done?
Well, I'll touch wood on that, and I won't do that because I can see the podcast engineer just saying, do not touch wood.
He's bracing.
So I'll touch my head. we hope that there's nothing like it in North America, EMEA, and Asia. And the reason we think we happen to have timing, a lot of startup business work is all about timing, is the fact that hardware and software and some key technological global revolutions didn't happen until very recently. Mm. So this idea had its initial concept. It was an idea that came from 2001, 2002, but it was only after the financial crisis around 2010 to 2012 that the various things from hardware to software to, frankly, Steve Jobs' iPhone development came together and enabled us to apply creative ideas to serve property people.
And what kind of reaction have you had so far?
Uniformly very positive. Mm. Insofar as so-called essential features are concerned, we have some institutions that can just hit the ground running and use it immediately with version one features. And there are others who are waiting in the sidelines, ready to jump on it as soon as we get, for example, indexation, which is coming early in the quarter.
Mm. So what are your plans for this year then? Obviously to get kind of the Dashflow out in front of as many people as possible, for people to understand what it's all about. But you mentioned sort of adding stuff there. Are there plans to continue to build and you know, grow on what you've already produced?
Yes, we have some very exciting plans for this year. We have three main strands, sort of themes that we're developing. One is the internationalization of the app. So we want to get out of the UK, focus on Europe, US and other territories.
Can I interrupt just there? Sure. How easy do you think that's going to be? I mean, mm-hmm. what I've been looking at and keeping an eye on with interest is the movement of startups and particularly software sort of across the globe and going into different regions, and how even with something sort of as seemingly easy to move around as a piece of software, it can actually be quite difficult to enter new markets. What's your strategy for that?
That is a very absorbing question, and I better not dig myself into a rabbit hole. But yes, there are a number of challenges there. But I'd say two things. Number one, we have built this new technology from the ground up to be incredibly modularized, so that it helps our engineers update things and add bells and whistles. But number two, and we've had these discussions with some of the top 10 PRE firms in the world, to my prior experience with some sovereign wealth funds, is that it's such a small sociable industry in the higher echelons, just like any other industry, that if you look at the executive profiles that are dominant in our industry, a lot of them have gone through the Ivy League world. And that has been one of the key features in our automated artificial intelligence models, is to provide a fully functional financial model that adheres to the Whartons of this world, the MITs of this world, because they all expect the main institutional variables to be processed from the ground up of the lease information into nice, tidy quarterly highlights, into executive annual summaries. And that's what we've done.
That's an excellent answer.
Thank you very much.
Just because I know that lots of people struggle, and you know, the very answers come back with varying levels of, you know, detail, and it sounds like, you know, there's been a lot of thought gone into that. So that sounds excellent in terms of rolling it out across the world. So, and I interrupted you because you were saying there were three strands that you were focusing on. The first one was going to be to look to internationalize.
Yes.
So the second two?
So the second one is very much tied to the demo I was able to show you just beforehand.
I feel very honoured to have seen that. I feel sad for our poor listeners that can't see it, because it really is worth a look. But well, I'm sure we'll give them detail at the end as to how they might be able to do that. But
thank you. Well, on that second strand, and this was one of the challenges as a startup when creating a prototype with some step change in disrupting a work method, a very well-established, decades-old work method. The second strand is covering more real estate sectors to have that same fast process you saw in the demo. So, for example, the demo you saw was sketching and drawing an office building. So we want to be able to sketch and draw other asset classes, hotels, beds, in effect, student accommodation, all those other asset classes. We want to create the same five steps you saw to draw an office building. We want to do the same for other sectors. So we're going to branch out across other real assets. And thirdly, we want to improve the benefits in terms of importing and exporting. And this, again, is a strong pillar in our design approach. Everybody talks about mobile, but what does it mean to be mobile? It doesn't mean that you're listing your same comps, for example, on a website as it is on the phone. You want to benefit from the mobile revolution. So we're talking about bumping deals between phones. If you've got an iPhone and I've got an iPhone and I just want to share the deal in the coffee shop, I can just bump the phone and you get the same experience, and you can interrogate from big picture down to detail. So we'll be improving the way we can help people work with their own, forgive the jargon, data realities, whether they're working with a spreadsheet, a PDF, conversation, or a quick and dirty back of the envelope calculation. How can we help them at each stage to import their knowledge, work with it, and get to the result?
And let's talk about some of the kind of the logistics around. Well, I don't know if logistics is quite the right word actually, but in terms of how it's going to work in practice. So if somebody wants to sign up to Dashflow, how does it work? How would they get hold of it? And is there a price put on it? You know, how would they actually make it work for them?
Well, first of all, we need to get buy-in from the entire team. People at the coalface, the board, the IT department, and they can, once they have interest and they know which departments, because many types of users are in each company, once they know which departments are interested, which disciplines they may like to help with efficiency issues, the technical side of the company signs up to the VPP Apple Store, which is like a B2B store. And they can download as many licenses as they like, and they fill in, at the moment, a Dashflow order form. We'll be optimizing this and automating it in 2018. But they just fill out a form, and they can download for as many users as they like and distribute it through their own mobile device management systems.
Okay. And how much is that going to cost them?
Yes. Silly me to forget the key question. £125 per month per user. And essentially, we talk about it costing the same amount as a cup of coffee and a donut a day.
I was going to say a month. I was like, my goodness, who's spending £125 on a cup of coffee and a donut a day? I see. That makes much more sense. Yes. And so, and you said it's a little bit, I think you said earlier, it's a bit like a gym membership, isn't it? So you can sign up and it's relatively easy to, you're not tied in for a long time. You can, it's quite flexible.
That's right. That's right. Very much like a gym. You can come and go when you want to get fit, when you want to sort of, you know, streamline your processes or you have a lot on. For example, Lloyds Bank mentioned at a conference the other day, or one of the major banks said, you know, about 50 to 70% of their workload is done, you know, in November, December time of year. So we are trying to be very conscious of people's realities and their cycles of work during the year.
Well, that sounds brilliant. So, I mean, let's as well talk a little bit about you and how this all came about. So what was it that inspired Dashflow? What was the driving force behind that? I mean, obviously realizing there was a gap in the market, but you know, that's the first stage, and there's an awful lot of stuff that needs to happen to make something a reality.
That's right. It takes a while. It doesn't come across overnight. I was fortunate to get trained in various parts of the industry. So I started off in Helium Baker before it became the Cushman & Wakefield of this world, and then I moved across into Deutsche Bank. So I saw things from the lending side.
Yeah.
And then after that, I always wanted to be involved with the life of the asset, buying, the holding, improving of the asset and selling it. And that's why I tried to find a connection to my half other country, which is Chile. I tried to go to the US and work for Sam Zell. So I was working on the US side from a private equity perspective, and then later for a New York fund. And latterly, before I made the big startup switch into technology, I worked for one of the oldest institutions in England, Rockspring, in this field. And throughout my entire path, I could see that there was a fundamental amount of work that everybody's interested in, which is, does this building make money?
Yes, you know, that is the question.
That's the question. What is the profile of the asset? When do I win income? How can I improve income? And when do I lose income? And it doesn't matter if you're talking to the Starwoods and Colony Capitals of this world that are dealing with non-performing loans, all the way to your simple two-man band family wealth office. Everybody wants to know this question and do it as quickly and efficiently and as cheaply as possible. So this first version is trying to combine that strand of work between the lending, advisory, and investment side.
Mm. And are you able to reveal at this stage, you know, who you're working with already at the moment?
Yes, we have a number of customers from our sort of soft launch on our website, and we're very pleased to say that Colliers International is firmly on board, enjoying various features of it, M&G Real Estate, and Delancey. So yes, we've got some very good names in the industry. Very pleased that they all find something that is most useful to them.
Yeah, the thing that we've talked about a lot on this podcast over the last year, and of course out in the industry, whether that's on the property side or the tech side of the sort of cre-tech prop-tech equation, is that the industry can be pretty slow to adopt new technology and things that they don't necessarily quite get. And then there's been debate around, is that fair? Is it just that the right technology hasn't been available? Again, sorry, listeners who haven't yet seen the demonstration, but having seen the demonstration, it looks as though you've created something that is very intuitive and easy for people to get their heads around once they've seen it operate. From going into companies and speaking to them, would you say that you are seeing people look at it and sort of get it and think, do you know what? I don't need to know how that system works. I can see how it's going to work for me. Is that the key that unlocks people's, you know, fear of change?
I think it is. I think it is. And the more you explain to people that it's a relationship between man, woman and machine, the two together can never be beaten. That is something that hits to the heart of boards. They don't need to know tech. They don't need to know coding. They don't need to know anything. But if you manage to create something, and touch wood, again, I'll go for my head engineer, touch wood, if you create something that really does build on the technology advances we can use today and create an intuitive design that allows people to speak their mind, then you get the message straight to the business and the purse keepers, as it were.
Mm. Great stuff. Well, I mean, I think that it looks fantastic and that everybody should check it out. if they want to check it out, is there anywhere that they can do that or go or contact you, or what's the next step?
Next step, just go and visit dashflowcre.com.
Great. And I believe that there is a potential for a free trial. Is that right? Or am I making that up?
No, you're not making it up. The free trial, especially for the skeptics out there, you can test drive this.
Who would still be a skeptic after listening to this podcast?
you can test drive it for a week, for a month, depending on what plan you choose. And you can test drive not only the user interface, but also you can see the dash models it produces, which are fully functional investment models, as we mentioned at the beginning. But if you look at the pricing point today, I'd just like to add that each one of those models it produces are custom made. And if you were to go and get a consultant today to create a new model for you, it can cost anywhere between 10 to 15 grand.
Well, there we go. Oh, I've said it. That's the thing I always say on this podcast. Well, there you go. And I hadn't until the very last minute.
That's the objective, I think, isn't it?
And finally, I was saying earlier about talking. We were talking earlier about your accent, and you were saying that nobody gets it. So, reveal to the audience who might be wondering whereabouts are you from.
I'm born in Wales and raised in Chile, in Argentina.
Oh, there you go. Yes. That's there it is again. Double there you go. That's obviously the mix that you get. So thank you very much for coming in and joining us. I can't think of a better way to start off, kick off 2018 than with something like this, like Dashflow, which I really do think that the industry has been crying out for. And I hope that it all goes well. And I'm sure that there'll be lots of people signing up for that free trial, the equivalent of a coffee and a donut a day.
Well, pleasure to be here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'm not going to say, so there you go. It was the first thing that popped into my head, but I didn't say it. I was stronger than that.
Yeah.
So that was that.
Is that the 2018? So
that's
there you
the
go.
New, that's the new one. You guys are welcome. As I said, I think that what he has there is really worth looking into. And I hope that listeners found it as interesting and informative as I did. So so there you go. I can't believe I did it. Anyway, never mind.
It wouldn't be a Tech Talk Radio without
so there you go. But I think a really good combination for our first foray back into Tech Talk Radio after the new year. We've spoken to the guys making it happen for the entrepreneurs, and we've spoken to one of the entrepreneurs looking to make it happen, which is kind of where we want to be, really. And
absolutely.
On top of that, you know, helping the property companies and the property industry with their digital transformation strategies.
And do stay tuned, because that will be a theme going through this year, that we'll be looking at the technologies out there that are working to help this industry do its job easier, better, faster, you name it. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled for Tech Talk Radio's coming forward. And again, if you are an entrepreneur out there and you want to be part of the show, then do drop Emily or I an email. Our email addresses are firstname.surname@egi.co.uk. That is our firstname.surnames, not actually just firstname.surname, because that would be weird.
And for any regular listeners, you'll know the significance of this, but it is Wright, spelt with a W.
Yeah.
By the way, there's no other way to spell it. Anyway.
And there's no E in McClary.
There is an Emily. Okay, on that note,
it's time to listen to the new music again.
Yay!